Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
You cannot pass!
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 90. 10 away from 100. Right. Hell yeah. What are you drinking? Is that a Pepsi?
He's drinking a Pepsi.
Pepsi.
All right.
God.
Gross, dude. That's just like a regular, that's a regular Pepsi, too.
I know.
You're probably the first person to buy a regular Pepsi this year.
So I ordered Seamless, and they hit like the limit or whatever where they give you two sodas for free, and there's no place where you could ask which type of sodas you could get. So I put on my regular meals like option thing. I said, please give me two Diet Cokes, and they gave me a regular Coke and a regular Pepsi. So I guess they covered all their bases, but I didn't get any what I wanted.
I've got some exciting news today. I bought this drum pad for the baby, little baby. She's got this baby Einstein drum pad, and I'm going to be doing rim shots after every joke.
Oh, yes. Let's do
it.
You have to put it closer to the mic. Test that again.
I don't know if I can, dude.
Do it after mine, too.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
It works. This thing is awesome.
That's pretty good.
No. Anyway, how was your guys' weekend? Okay, football recap. LCBP.
Yeah.
LC Plus. LC Plus.
If you're a listener, you'll know, or an audience member, excuse me, you'll know what our bet was, because it'll just be obvious. But it's not going to be obvious to the people.
Holy shit.
That see what the bet is. It's hard to explain, but the bet will be settled because Ken Jack's team did destroy my team today pretty handily.
It's going to win.
It was a good win. Yeah.
Not for you, though.
Your team
is good.
Not for
the Browns because they lost.
The thing about the Chargers is like, nice. Good one. Nice.
It applauds you if you just leave it stationary for a while.
The thing about the Chargers is that they've lost to the two undefeated teams. So I feel like they look like they're good on paper, but then they're just going to get destroyed in the second half of the second leg of the season. So I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I had them like top 10 first week of the year, I think, or like the second week. I forget when I did, but people were, they're like, Chargers. I'm like, I kind of believe in this team, but I'm a sucker for Phillip Rivers because I like quarterbacks who throw the football weird.
Yeah, he's got that sidearm delivery, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I always gave myself that delivery in Madden when I would create myself.
Yeah.
For the delivery, I create my 5 foot. Okay, it's clapping it. My 5 foot 10. 180-pound player with 99 overall speed. Because I got to be realistic on the measurements, but not on the actual stats.
Yeah.
I've said that joke 100 times. It's in my stand-up routine.
So, yeah, Ken Jack's team won, but the real winner this week was you because you bought a Kindle.
Yes, a Kindle Paperwhite, actually.
What,
not that, not that base model
again.
Kindle.
Yeah, I need you to complain like you did before. You have a complaint about Amazon and their inability to give us free stuff.
Well, I love Amazon Prime. I think it's a great deal. I mean, it's definitely – we talked about this the other day. Like, you go on, and if something doesn't have free same-day shipping, you're like, I don't really want it anymore. So it's definitely spoiled us in a lot of different aspects. But – there's a lot of these different devices that I think are kind of cool, but I don't want to shell out $100 for an Echo or a Dot. I feel like that stuff, for a Prime member, they should just send you one for free. and then you can try it out and test it, and you're going to use it to access Amazon servers. So they get your data and your private recordings, then they get to hear you do whatever you do in your bedroom, and you get to order stuff from Amazon. But I say that as I did buy a Kindle. There are apparently a couple different models of the Kindle, and you can get a discount on a Kindle if you get the model with the they put advertising on it, which I didn't know, which doesn't piss me off that much, but it does feel kind of invasive. Anyway, well,
you
I'm a reader now.
You bought a Kindle, yeah. So I just assumed you like to read dumb shit.
Big I'm nerd. A reader. I got it from my manga.
Can you even read manga on it?
I was just reading the Wikipedia page on the Kindle last night, and there's a special manga edition they sell in Japan.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
Made specifically for manga. But I was talking to my wife, and I'm like, I think I'm going to order a Kindle. She's like, why? Like, I just like read books on my phone. And I'm like, how do you have any eyesight left? Like, how do you not have constant migraines? I cannot do that.
Do you, can you do anything on that Kindle besides read books?
I don't think so. The interface is very like 1994 Apple Newton like.
Yes.
But it doesn't have much functionality. It's very slow, but in terms of like the screen and looking like a book, it definitely serves its purpose. So I read two pages of Neil Gaiman's book on Norse mythology, and that's my reading for the week. So I'll finish that book sometime in 2021, I'm sure.
The Newton's a good reference because I just rewatched Steve Jobs because I got really upset about how much I hated the newsroom, and I tweeted about it. And some people were kind of mad at me, but most people agree the newsroom sucked dick. But
I already fired you.
Yeah,
close.
Yeah.
How did we feel about Steve Jobs?
Oh, but I say
the movie.
I loved Steve Jobs. Okay. I'm also a big Sorkin guy. So.
What about Cash? Not the person. The person, I think Steve Jobs, as we get further away from news coming out about him, or maybe even at the time, we don't really love him as a person, right?
He essentially committed suicide, right? Like he like refused to do real treatment for his disease and choose like homeopathic medicine. And they said like if he had actually just gotten surgery when they told him to, he would have been fine, but he chose not to.
I don't want to call that what you just called it, but I do think the rumor is.
Well, isn't that essentially what it is? Like it's an ideological
for
suicide.
For sure, not for us to decide.
Yeah. And I'm going to say no, and I'm not going to discuss it anymore, but I will not completely shut you down. I will say the rumor is that he decided to juice and stuff like that instead of, I don't know. It's sad that he died.
So like if I had like a terminal disease or something, and I'm like, I'm going to drink Pepsi to fix this. And you'd be like, okay, that's cool. You're doing a good thing. You wouldn't be like, hey, you should not do that because that's basically killing yourself.
But if you believe that something is actually going to help you.
But he knows the difference, though.
He obviously did not, if that is the case, allegedly.
You think Steve Jobs didn't know that what he was doing wasn't going to work compared to like Western medicine?
I don't know. But what I do know about Steve Jobs is that he, instead of getting actual license plates for his car, he would just buy a new car every 2 months and use the dealer tags. Because he didn't want to be ID'd, or he would just not get plates on the car and collect the fines.
I don't know if he was considered a bad person. I know he was noted by many to be an asshole. I know like Steve Wozniak was like one of the ones who apparently had the most issues with him. And he even in the end was like, you know, like no matter what, through it all, we were friends. I know there's backstories with like his kid and all this stuff, but like there's a lot. He's definitely a complicated person, but we talked about this last week because Trill and I got the new iPhones, and we continue to marvel at how little Apple innovates. And we're just like, he used to innovate a lot, and now they don't do shit anymore.
But I also feel some of that is like, not to get too Joe Rogan on you guys, but I feel like
Jamie.
Okay, Jamie, Google that. Yeah, he's fighting a bear. Anyway, I feel like we've reached this like innovation plateau where. Like with the current formats of like phones, we've gone pretty much as far as we can. And then the next step is something really crazy, like microchips in our brains or something.
Yeah, but there's still plenty of things that Apple holds back with their products and doesn't do, or did, or took years to put in that. It's like, even just like customizing the interface of your phone. Like Ken Jeck does not have an iPhone. He has a Samsung device, and like you can
Love
do,
it.
you could be like, there's shit that you could do on there years ago, because I used to have one.
Yeah.
And then when I changed back to the iPhone, I lost features. I mean, not to make this a fucking Apple podcast, but yeah, it just, I don't know. Well, I've always felt that.
There is stuff that has been on Android phones since 2008 that they just got around in like 2015 is implementing, and they give it name like Ultra Retina IPC or something like that. Insane Clown Posse. And they market it as that, even though it's like 8-year-old technology. But going back to Steve Jobs, yeah, you know, I don't want to call him a bad person because I don't know anything about him. But there are a lot of stories that come out and it's like, damn, that guy sounds like an asshole. But at the same time, those asshole like qualities are probably what made him successful at what he did. So
I'm going to go out on a limb.
Like, yeah,
I'm going to say he was better than Ray Kroc, the McDonald's.
Better or worse than Andrew Carnegie.
Bold.
I remember
bold call saying he's better than the guy who stripped away the last name of the people who created McDonald's. But I'm just going to go there.
Maybe. I do know.
Did he make the crock pot out of curiosity?
No, he didn't. I don't know. I think it's a crock pot because it's an actual crock.
I don't know what that means. I thought a crock was like a crazy person or something.
I think like the English language, as you'll learn more about the English language, Kinjek, English language is a script of pronunciation.
Owned.
Owned. Cell phone. There's multiple meanings for a word.
No, let's dude, get he into didn't cell phones. That let's get into actually create those. So.
Okay.
It's a brand name? I can't find out why Crock-Pot got its name.
So, okay, something like the AirPods, right? The AirPods are great. I think they're great, but they don't blow
as
you
you're
away.
Wearing as you're wearing fucking AirPods. But
it's stuff like with the AirPods, like the battery life sucks in the AirPods, and they don't have wireless charging, and the sound quality is not that great. So you lose out
it's
on
cosmetic.
That. But then the integration, but no, it's the integration with like the Apple products and that like the Bluetooth connects almost always. And you don't have issues with it in that front. You can easily switch between stuff. And if you like want to jump on a call, the audio from your microphone's pretty good. So it's good for that too. So it's like there's some things that are really good about it, but then also it's like not the best thing ever. And there's things that you want. And that's like the synthesis of Apple right now. It's like
they also just look dumb, to be frank.
I love them. I mean, I love AirPods.
I think they just look weird when people wear them.
They're better than those wraparound neck headphones.
Well, fucking anything's better than that. Like listening to a boombox attached to your phone is
looking like you're in a shitty fan-made Star Trek movie.
Neck roll bullshit. I mean,
a crock is a pot.
Alexa, buy me more Tide.
Beep boop boop beep. Look, the moral of all this is that Jeff Bezos should give out free Kindles.
Yes.
The point of all this, my whole question is that can you do anything other than read books is because like if you can only read books, then why not give them out for free? Because you have to buy books once you get it anyway. It's like if you get in, you can't buy books. It's just a fucking just a piece of tech on your desk.
Because they can. That's the thing.
True. Oh. But he also did. He did slash the price of rotisserie chickens. I got a rotisserie chicken today, and I watched somebody. One of my favorite things is we talked about this on our makeshift radio show that Ken Jack, myself, and Tyler were on. We had Coley last week too. It would be a shame if there was more of that to come. We talked about people that you'd want to beat the shit out of. And I said people who berate younger people who work in customer service or retail. And this woman went to go pick up a rotisserie chicken and burn the shit out of her hands. Which, keep in mind, it's sitting on one of like, those metal fucking things that keep the chicken warm. And she dropped it on the ground. It went everywhere. And she just screamed at this kid who worked there. Like, don't pick up the fucking rotisserie with your bare hands next time. Maybe, like, maybe be smarter about it. Don't pick it up from the fucking bottom. Screaming at him.
Then she in a huff, picked up the pieces of the rotisserie chicken, stuffed them into her pockets, and walked out of the store.
Just dripping grease.
Oh, man. All right. We have an interesting break of news here. We have three things that are great, and then four things that they're, you know, they're news, I guess. But the first three things are pretty solid pieces of news. First up, the Aladdin teaser trailer. This was hyped up pretty big, and like a bunch of fucking sheep, all of us sat there and expected it to be anything more than just a couple exterior shots and then a quick shot of a main character at the end, much like the Beauty and the Beast trailer. And sure enough, that's what we got. Exterior shots, and a quick shot of a character at the end. Though I will say, when Beauty and the Beast did that with Emma Watson, that trailer came out, I think, 8 or 9 months before the
Holy
movie.
Shit.
This one's only like 6 months. What?
Sorry, I'm watching SNF right now. They just made a Blacklist reference.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like, live, this just happened. All right, sorry, not to derail that, but that was incredible. Wow. Rush of Blood right now. Not saying which direction. No.
Lizzie. His code name is Eli Manning.
His code name is Julio Jones. He never scores.
So people got pretty mad online. People were either really mad about the trailer not showing anything. You did see, what's the bird's name again?
Iago.
Yes. Yeah. Who they have not confirmed if it's going to be Gilbert Gottfried or not. There is no confirmation who's playing Iago. But
hey, it's me, Gilbert Gottfried.
No, you got it. And then you see the cave.
What are you gonna do?
You see the lamp. And you see Aladdin at the end. You don't see the genie. That's what pissed everyone off. Everyone, genie. You're going to see it. It is 3 months later on in the process in Beauty and the Beast, but there's going to be either a Super Bowl trailer or something attached to something in December, I guess. I don't know, but we're going to see something soon. But for now, it was kind of cool to see. Hearing the music was neat. That was probably the coolest part. But just a plain old teaser.
Bob Iger, how dare you, sir?
Sir?
Sir. Folks, the last time Aladdin was this disappointing, I rolled over and started sobbing.
Ooh, I kind of like that one.
Oh,
I didn't think of a joke for this one, so we're going to have to stick with that one.
Okay, we'll talk about the, you know.
And just bleep that whole thing out.
Nope, unedited version. Nope. All right, talk about the trailer, though.
It wasn't a trailer, it was a teaser.
And
I wanted more, even out of a teaser. It was like, here's the parts of Aladdin you don't really care about. The whole cave and the lamp. You want to see the genie. That's what we wanted. Just give me a peek. Just break me off a little of that genie.
I just sent you a picture of the cave, actually, in our chat.
Just the cave saying, fuck you.
Yes.
I mean, like, let's be honest here.
That was actually what it was.
let's call a spade a spade. There is a 0% chance people are going to be accepting of this genie, right? Like, there's 90% of people viewing this movie are going to say, this is bullshit. Rest in peace, Robin. Where's Robin?
Well, who, if anybody, I think out right now, as far as actors goes, would you pick to replace Robin Williams? I think if I could pick anybody, it might just actually be Will Smith. Like, is that same perfect type of like just perfect personality, I think, wise to match up with that.
Yeah. And also, I feel like there's enough goodwill with Will Smith.
Huh.
Where, yeah, that's actually not one of our lame jokes. there's enough goodwill where he can get away with it. So. Because, like, who else, like, who's another comedian that would play that role right now who would just get roasted?
This not is an unedited saying, episode, right?
Not
Joe
saying,
Rogan.
Yeah, unedited. So let's – I'll edit if I have to. So not saying Aladdin. James Corden or Josh Gad.
Hmm.
I feel like Kevin Hart is somebody who would probably
–
but he doesn't have enough goodwill. Like, Will Smith, like, it's Will Smith. Like, whatever.
I don't know. I don't know if there's another comedian right now, especially not another good comedian actor, if that makes sense.
Who's Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Tom Hanks could do it.
I could see Tom Hanks.
It wouldn't really fit in that well because I don't see Tom Hanks as – and when you think the genie, you think of some dynamic personality Williams. That's not Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is Tom Hanks. We love Tom Hanks, folks. We love him. But
we love him.
At the same time, people are going to be – even if Will Smith's genie is good, people are just going to be fake disappointed for the internet points or whatever. Because I think Will Smith will be able to pull it off. I think he'll do his own thing on it. I was just very curious as to what it sounds like.
Also, obviously, the genie's going to look like shit too. Like no one's going to be happy with the design of that genie. Like
who knows?
I didn't mind the Beast, but you know everyone got mad online about the Beast. Like that's what the Beast looks like in Beauty and the Beast? Like are you kidding me? It's like, well, I mean, what did you – like? Whoa.
It's just a fucking black smoke monster from Lost.
Actually, the genie is just Aladdin's hormone monster.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do the thing.
Do the mom, Aladdin. Oh, what are you going for?
Yeah, so that's Aladdin. That's a teaser trailer. We'll get more probably into, I would imagine, Super Bowl. But then also they have to deal with the, so there's three coming out next year. There's Dumbo, there's Aladdin, and then there's Lion King. And Lion King is going to dwarf the other two, because the Lion King, the hype for that is going to be huge. So especially Dumbo. I don't know how Dumbo is going to compete with these two in terms of like just hype and praise. Another trailer.
Tim Burton's Dumbo, by the way. Yeah,
Tim. And Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton's in it.
Colin Farrell.
Yep, Colin Farrell. I think Danny DeVito's in it, too. Glass. Another trailer for Glass. I was kind of bummed out with this trailer. I think they showed a lot. They showed a lot of stuff in the trailer. In the previous trailer, there was a lot of tense scenes they showed. And this one, they showed the tense scenes and then kind of showed what happened in the tense scenes as opposed to just the setup. Wasn't, not a big fan of that, because I'm actually looking forward to this movie.
I'm keeping my expectations real low for this one. Oh, I don't know about you guys. Yeah, I'm trying not to get too hyped, because you work with numbers long enough, you know when something is an outlier. And M. Night Shyamalan's last film, Split, could have been an outlier. So that's I'm not getting up hope that he's back. That could have just been an outlier.
He was anointed as being back very quickly for somebody who hadn't made a good movie in a very long time.
Like since The Village, maybe, right?
I don't even think The Village was good. I didn't really like The Village.
I didn't That's love like, it. I think it's like not considered terrible, right?
And like, I'm trying to think of someone who people say is back. Well, the big joke on Twitter is people say Tiger's back. But even Tiger Woods would like compete up in the top five of tournaments. Like M. Night was making bottom of the barrel dog shit movies, like Last Airbender.
That's like, I mean, so bad.
The Last Airbender was, I mean, the movies he was making were terrible. But I actually, that's a very, very astute take, Trillbones. What about you, Ken Jack? Glass trailer.
So, folks, actually, after the events of Unbreakable, David Dunn tried to become a bartender, but got rejected at his interview. Yeah, he poured a finger of whiskey into a beer stein when he probably should have shot glass.
Oh. Nailed it. Nailed it.
You got to
I had a joke written for this one, but I'm going to pull this joke.
No, that's not fair.
I'm going to pull it. I don't think people will get it. I'll release it to you guys on the group chat, and then Jeff, you can post it tomorrow in the LC Plus.
Okay. Yeah. That's where all the stuff goes. Ken Jack, now your other takes on this trailer.
On Glass, I like Split. I think they gave away too much in this trailer, I would say, because you kind of have like the full breadth of what's going to happen in it. But other than that, still going on, excited to see it.
They show that scene where, what's his face?
The Beast.
The Beast. They're taunting those cheerleaders, which is like a tense scene because he like eats people in Split. And then all of a sudden you just see Bruce Willis like take him out and stop the attack. It's like, well, why are you showing that to us now? The movie comes out in like 5 months, 4 months. Just wait till the movie comes out.
Yeah. It was a lot. It was a lot in that trailer. Yeah. But like I'm saying, I'm expecting. Let me give you what my projection.
Okay, hold on. Wait. Let me say one more thing. Also, them showing how they can change his personalities by using those.
Yes. Slaps.
I would want to see that.
Yes.
Movie.
That's the plot device. That's the Chekhov's gun. No, that's the wrong thing. That's Schrodinger's.
Sorry. Continue with what you were saying.
That's the MacGuffin, Chekhov's gun. Oh no, I just was agreeing. It's we know a lot about this movie. I think I'm gonna rate this movie preliminary. I'm gonna give it about a 70. I'm gonna put it at a 70. And if it's a 65 or a 60, I'm not gonna be too disappointed.
So you're like a glass half empty type guy?
Look at that one. That was the best one that was written on the spot. I like that.
I actually wrote it down before saying it just now. I didn't even have time to say it myself.
Oh, man. All right. Last trailer, and then we got to have a quick ad read, and then into the other news, which I feel like is going to be peppered with some jokes. Pet Sematary trailer. We talked about it. We talked about it. Games last Thursday. It had not been released yet. I think the Pet Sematary trailer sucked.
folks. This is so bad. Folks, I buried Garfield in the pet cemetery. You know, whatever is buried there doesn't come back right. Well, he came back loving Mondays and hating lasagna.
That's pretty good. I like that one.
Yeah, folks, I heard they're actually looking to up the scale of the animals involved in this pet cemetery. They cast John Hamm as a horse, and they changed the name to Pet Cemetery 2, Heavy Petting. Gotta put it closer to the mic.
Yeah, we can't hear it. Come on.
I didn't think this looked very good either. But from the trailer, I do think that this is one of my favorite Stephen King movies I've seen, the original one. So that I think the premise is there. I know. Maybe I'll read one on my Kindle. Maybe they might have the Langoliers for free on Prime. But not getting my hopes up on this one either. It's just kind of a weak trailer, right? Didn't come with it. Didn't come with enough intrigue.
Oh.
Yeah. Yep.
I was waiting for the cum part. That's what I thought he paused on that.
No, it's no joke. I'm a dad. I don't I don't lower myself to that.
I don't know. It just looks okay. I'm not really interested in horror movies like you guys know. And one that's already been made and wasn't really based off a super scary premise, in my opinion, is just not something that holds my intrigue.
A lot of John Lithgow.
Well, did you know, Ken Jack, that in the rundown that Jeff sent earlier, he actually spelled it Pet Seminary?
I did. I saw that. I was like, Pet Seminary would be funny, like where it's just like priest cats or whatever.
That's a fucking Kevin James movie for sure. Yeah. Where Father McGarnacle, and he just takes in dogs and cats to this seminary.
I actually kind of like that.
That's actually, I mean, you are onto something. That does sound like a shitty, and like, wait, it's Kevin James, but like, are the animals? Do they coexist with humans, like as talking animals, like a priest cat?
No, I think it's a Dr. Doolittle type situation where only he can hear them talk.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, no.
I kind of like that.
Well, pretty good. Pet Seminary coming to theaters very soon. Okay. Well, we're going to have some more news in a second, but first, I want to make sure everybody knows that this episode is brought to you in part by Stitch Fix. That's right. I saw a home run just happen. I didn't know if that was. I'm watching the baseball game. Stitch Fix. We know Stitch Fix. It's an online personal styling service.
Siri! God damn it!
Okay, I'm done. We're gonna retire that one. That one's retired. Hang the banner.
Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that finds and delivers clothes, shoes, and accessories to fit your body, budget, and lifestyle. No more shopping. We've talked about this before. No more brick and mortar stores. Don't waste your time. You'll be paired with your very own personal stylist who will handpick 5 items to send right to your door. Then you try them on, pay only for what you love, and return the rest. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. Stitch Fix styling fees only $20, which is applied toward anything you keep from your shipment. Get started now at stitchfix.com/lights, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box. That's stitchfix.com/lights to get started today. We got ours, guys. Trill, mostly, because you're the fit man here in the group. What was the favorite piece of clothing that you kept from your Stitch Fix box?
Like the Nike Tech Fleece.
Nice fleece. You do look good in a nice fleece, nice quarter zip.
Yeah, Tech Fleece, I like them because for me, it's like stuffing meat into a sausage casing. real slim look. Just pull it off very poorly. It's like putting a potato into a PVC pipe.
Stitchfix.com/light. Stitch Fix is the way to go. Trust me, we use it. That's how we style. We're not wearing our own merchandise. All right, how about this one? This is an interesting story. I don't like reading these weird comic book stories, but this one was funny enough where I had to say it. The creator of Thanos, Jim Starlin, said that he had always envisioned somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Idris Elba playing Thanos. First off, wild difference between those two people. I mean, you couldn't really pick two different actors, especially like style of acting, what they sound like. I mean, I guess Idris Elba I could see as Thanos.
I got to say, though, Jim Starlin, I have a lot of respect for him. He's created a lot of good things, according to the Wikipedia page. He's almost 70 years old. He's 69 years old. Nice. He has not always envisioned Idris Elba as Thanos. Because Idris Elba did not come into the collective American pop cultural psyche until, what, maybe 15 years ago, if I'm being generous?
If that.
So when did he create? I can see Arnold. I can see Idris as Thanos too, but I feel like this guy probably had some like Dolph Lundgren type ideas for Thanos that he's just not letting on.
Did he create Thor by chance? Because he was in Idris Elba was in Thor, and maybe just because he was in one of his properties, his name came to mind.
I don't know. He did say he liked Brolin, though. He said he couldn't see anyone else doing Thanos and Brolin.
Yeah, so,
Go ahead.
You know, folks, I actually heard that they considered Mel Gibson for the role too, but he just really hates the color purple.
Folks, this Thanos guy is wild. It's wild. Have you heard about him? Have you seen this Thanos guy? He snaps his fingers and half of everything goes away. That must have been what the doctor did in my circumcision.
God damn it.
Oh, is that the worst one yet?
No. That was definitely the most ham-fisted one.
The Garfield one's worse than that.
No, I love the Garfield one. I'm all in on the Garfield one. That was good. A bit of a...
Hold on.
There it is. That was a strange story. Doctor Strange 2, speaking of strange, that might start filming soon, which Doctor Strange 2 wasn't even happening as of like 7 or 8 months ago, like wasn't even a rumor, and now they may just start filming, which I guess they have everything ready to go, right? Like they have content, they have story ideas, and they have their Doctor Strange. So that might be happening soon, coming off the heels of him being a well-liked character following Infinity War, because Benedict Cumberbatch was probably one of the bigger winners with Infinity War. Thoughts there?
Folks, have you heard about this Doctor Strange? We had a hard time explaining it to Kenjack because Kenjack calls Doctor Strange the guy at the Genius Bar who fixes his Tinder app.
I like that one.
I'm going one for four right now, right?
All right. Well, you know what, Trill and folks in general, I actually heard that they're making a Doctor Strange prequel. It's about Doctor Strange's childhood in which he walked in on his mother having an affair with her tennis instructor. They're calling it a Doctor Strange Love.
Folks, calm down. Calm down, folks.
That one was much better.
That was the one where I texted you guys. I'm like, I'm not sure if you guys will get it because I don't know if you played tennis before, but
that one was much better.
I think it landed.
Before we move on.
You know what, Jeff? You didn't write any jokes. How dare you?
You can't judge us.
Before we move on, how much do you care more about a Doctor Strange 2 after Infinity War? Because I feel like after Doctor Strange, which I liked, I didn't need to ever see a Doctor Strange movie again. But now after him being cool and more expansive in Infinity War, you know what? Kind of into it.
I feel like I like Doctor Strange more in the ensemble environment and not in his own standalone movie.
That's a good point.
I kind of like this movie. I think as long as they have the special effects team they have from the first one back, I'll be into it because I still think they probably, out of the entire MCU, have had the best special effects by like a million miles. Like their team was amazing. And like, I kind of wish they would use them for Black Panther 2 instead of using them for Doctor Strange 2 because the special effects in Black Panther 1 were awful.
Well, let's talk about Black Panther 2 real quick. Ryan Coogler back on board. He's going to be creating the whole thing. After a very successful first movie, which still, and I like Black Panther, still for some odd reason has Best Picture hype. I don't get that. I don't personally think it belongs there, but it is a very awesome movie. I fucking love Black Panther too. I hope they focus a little more on T'Challa. Not that Killmonger was bad. He was a great villain, but I think the thing just needs to be a little stronger of a Black Panther movie in terms of the character. Trill, I'll let you start it off, I guess.
This news wasn't really news to me, right? They can't do Black Panther 2 without Coogler. So I'm glad he's back, but it just wouldn't be the same. Even Creed 2, now I have a little bit of anxiety about that. You know, I know he's on as a production credit, but his involvement, I feel like, is critical for this in the sequel of Black Panther 2. Don't know. That's my take on it.
You don't have anything for it other than that?
Folks, how you doing tonight? Yeah, thanks for coming. Folks, I haven't been this excited for Ryan coming back to a major franchise since Jack Ryan released on streaming. Now available to all Amazon Prime members. Amazon Prime, only $59 a year, but the benefits are incredible. Not only do you get access to free shipping, but also access to streaming video, free books, and music. Not to mention the integration with Alexa on various low-priced Amazon devices like the Dot and Echo. Amazon Prime, ship, stream, shop, and read all on Prime today. Not an ad.
I mean, that was perfect. We're going to get like a goodie box or something from Amazon, just like add-on items that are like $2 that you don't want to buy solo.
And yeah, nothing you want, like a sleeve for your wired headphones or like something.
Mouthwash.
We'll get a package in the mail. It's like Amazon Basics USB-A to stereo mini connector.
So folks, I was reading an interview, and apparently Ryan Coogler originally wanted to use the Beatles' Greatest Hits for the movie. But then when he listened to Strawberry Fields, he said, "Wakanda Forever is this."
I don't get it.
Strawberry Fields Forever, you know the song?
That's pretty good.
That was Strawberry good. Fields Forever.
Dewey Cox with the Beatles.
We're the Beatles, Dewey Cox.
We interviewed the cast of mid-90s, and one of them mentioned Dewey Cox.
He did. That's like one of their favorite movies. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah. Did not expect that. Yeah, we have the mid-90s cast interview coming up in a few weeks. And we're going to be talking to Monday, Ike Barinholtz. We're interviewing Ike Barinholtz on Monday. Very excited about that. That'll be airing on Sunday. The mid-90s one will be airing on the Sunday after the movie's release. We were asked to hold that one. Very funny interview. Those kids were pretty hilarious. All right, last but not least. Actually, Kenjuck, you wrote an article about Black Panther 2, Coogler, you're excited. So I think that's all that really needs to be said there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited. No, you're not, bitch. I'm more excited than you. Shut up. Dude,
there's no way.
I'm way more excited than you. I'm half masked right now over Black Panther 2.
Hobbs and Shaw. First look at Hobbs and Shaw, or second look. First look at Idris Elba and Hobbs and Shaw. Honestly, I kind of just added this in there because I figured there could be a folks joke from it. It's just a fucking picture of Idris Elba. I mean, there's really nothing to say here. So take it away, Joe Bollins.
Oh, folks, The Rock and Jason Statham walked into Studio Head's office and said they had a great idea for a movie. The exec asked what they had, and immediately The Rock started shitting into a Brookstone shoulder massager in the corner. Statham started pissing upwards, spinning into a circle. They danced to the middle of the room and started punching each other in the butt and farting and shitting. The exec jumped out of the chair and said, "This sounds amazing. What's it called?" And they both said, "The Aristocrats."
Boom.
And the exec said, "Let's just call it Hobbs and Shaw."
I can't believe you finally found a way to do it. I found a way to get an Aristocrats joke in here. I knew it was coming too because you mentioned it a few days ago. You said you were going to do an Aristocrats joke, and I just totally forgot about.
You knew it was coming because I outright told you it was coming.
Yeah, but you didn't say which episode. Like, this was like a week ago. You said this. All right. Look, I'm eating salted almonds. I can't be bothered by you.
What's your joke? Oh, wait, you didn't have one here.
I didn't have one. I couldn't just make a fucking Aristocats. Announcing Aristocats. I mean, even funnier one. There, that was my joke. Look at that. I got a bigger laugh from you than you got from me. So
all right, Jeff, what was the best joke of the night?
The Dr. Strangelove joke was pretty good.
Tinchak's two for two.
But I will say the Garfield one I did like a lot. I don't know why. Maybe it's recency bias because we just talked to John Arbuckle. But it was pretty good. It was a good performance tonight. I liked all the jokes. I think there was a meme that was posted on our Reddit. I'm not going to say what it is that got reported. It's incredibly inappropriate. I just want to say, please stop posting very inappropriate cartoon memes.
What was it? I didn't see it.
It's pretty fucking bad. I'm not going to say what it is, but I'm going to send it to the group right now, and you'll get genuine reaction. This is what it is.
All
right. An Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh my God.
It's just not.
I gotta open this up. I gotta add my lock screen and my background is a picture of my child, and now I'm going to open go straight from that into what you just posted. Oh, Jesus Christ.
So I didn't take it down. It got four reports. It got reported four times.
Yes, I mean, that's FBI level, like, flagging right there.
A lot of the comments are, this guy got a lot of this ain't it, chief comments.
It was not Spartan Dog 97.
No, it was not. All right, thank God. He's too pure to pro something like that. I love Spartan Dog 97.
Shout out to Spartan Dog, Michigan State fan. They beat Penn State. Really pathetic. I'll shout him out for that. He wanted to make a bet about the fucking Young Sheldon pod because people still believe that exists. So I'll just give him the shout out.
Never happened.
Yeah, somebody else said not on my Christian sub, and then it got downvoted.
Yikes.
I mean, I like the photo. I like the image. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, man.
Save it for personal use.
Okay. We're going to review A Star Is Born. I guess I could have said that off. It's in the description. By the way, you can rate the movies that we review in the bottom of the description. The links to rating the movies is in every pod. That's going to be the easiest place for you to find them. They're all up. So we are going to review A Star Is Born. But first, we have another ad read. Trill, do you know what time it is?
Game time, baby.
Nope, I'm gonna ask again. Do you know what time it is? I'll try that again. Ken Jack, what time is it?
Game time.
Now look down at your movement watch on your wrist and let me know what time it is.
It is time for me to get a movement watch, which I have. It's just not on me right now.
My movement watch is on me, and it is 12:15 a.m.
What? So
we've talked about movement watches on here a bunch.
I don't like to wear my movement watch in Hoboken because I'm afraid people like will think I'm like too ritzy. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. Yep. I agree. They've come far from just being a crowd-funded group of kids working out of a living room. In the past year, they've not only introduced a ton of new watch collections for both men and women, but also have expanded into sunglasses and fashion-forward bracelets. Not just for women, though. For men and women. Big fan of the sunglasses. Hit me up with some sunglasses. I always like changing up the sunglasses. But the watches are all about looking good and keeping it simple. Movement watches don't tell you how many steps you've taken or, you know, blow your wrist up with all the text messages, all that nonsense, you know. Movement watches, they start at just $95. You're looking at $400 to $500 for these watches anywhere else. But you can get 15% off your movement watches today with free shipping and free returns by going to MVMT.com/lights. MVMT, don't spell out the word movement, MVMT.com/lights to get your movement watches. See why movement keeps growing. Everyone in the office, they got their movement watches. You got to have movement watch. Go to MVMT.com/lights, 15% off your movement watches. I don't know math, but that's a lot of money off. Join the movement.
I had my movement at 8:30.
All right. A Star Is Born. We did see it, obviously. Ken Jack and I reviewed it. It's up online. We went pretty in depth. Trill Ballin saw it. Trill actually saw it before us, but Ken Jack and I kind of blew it. Hadn't seen it. So we did end up going to see A Star Is Born, and we all liked it a pretty big amount. I will say that. Star Is Born, I think, is probably the best movie I've seen this year. It's currently at the same level as Eighth Grade on my ratings. Haven't broken the tie yet. I don't know how I would break it. I think A Star Is Born might be number two, but it's one or two. It's an incredible movie. I think Lady Gaga's almost a shoo-in to win Best Actress. I'll be super surprised if she doesn't win Best Actress at this point. Bradley Cooper, he'll be nominated probably Best Director, potentially Best Actor. Or he should be nominated Best Actor. I'm not sure he'll win. Sam Elliott will definitely be nominated for Best Supporting Actor. So best good. Fucking voice in the business. I mean,
damn right.
Just he delivers every point he makes in that movie home solely on his voice. This will
12,
get at least
12 notes. 12 notes is all there is. You rearrange 12 notes. It's all up. I can't do it.
I like nothing.
He the movie should get at least three Best Original Song nominations. I mean, the movie's going to get a lot of nominations. It's going to win Best Song, too. Shallow is going to win Best Song. Even if it's not your favorite song on the album, we'll get to favorite songs. It's going to be the most iconic one, just like how City of Stars won for La La Land. All right, ratings. I gave it a 96. I thought it was an incredible movie. Ken Jack, what did you give A Star Is Born?
I gave it a 92. It was one of the better movies I've seen this year. I couldn't rate it that much higher based on, one, I didn't love Gaga's performance on a whole, especially just in the more emotionally tense moments. I thought Cooper absolutely killed it. I think she obviously killed it in basically every other arena of it, especially the original songs. Like you said, they should definitely be nominated and definitely win, in my opinion. But it was tough for me to rate it that much higher between that performance and also the fact that it's not an original property. It's like the second remake of a movie. And nothing... It was just really tough for me to put it higher than that. That said, I loved it. I think the portrayal of addiction in the movie, which is something we'll get into more in the later part of it, was absolutely incredible and like insanely accurate. So loved it. Absolutely must see movie on the year.
Yeah, I had it at a 95 when I first saw it. I tempered it down to a 90. I think it had this like afterglow effect where you're like, holy shit. A lot of that was from the music. And I mean, it was a great movie, putting it at a 90. So it's really not that much different. I think there's a lot of people who are overthinking this movie.
Yeah.
No kidding.
And yeah. And it's not like a prestige. I don't want to put it in the prestige movie category. To me, this is just a very mainstream, big Hollywood movie that, even though the subject matter is very depressing, is very entertaining to watch. It hits on some emotional cues that it didn't move me as emotionally as it moved a lot of people. I just, you know, like, it was just part of the story and some of the scenes who people were like, oh my God, it crushed me. And it just like, it didn't make me feel that way. But the scenes where, you know, Cooper and Gaga were on screen, I thought they had great chemistry. I thought the integration of the music into the movie was exceptional. And that was like my fear in a lot of those movies that are somewhat musicals, but use the music as like performances in the movie. They're somewhat like forced into there. And I thought this did that very naturally. And I thought Gaga did a great job. I don't think
emotionally tense parts is what I'm saying. That's it.
I don't think you said she did a bad job. So let me restate that. I thought Gaga exceeded my expectations in this movie. I thought she played the character very well. Cooper did as well. I loved his voice. I did want to wash his hair throughout the entire movie.
Yes, because he had
some of the filthiest hair I had ever seen on screen in that film. But it was part of his character and it was all done very well. And what I mean by like people overthinking the movie is I don't think this should be treated as like, name a prestige movie. I don't know.
The Artist.
Like, yeah, something like that. Like, I don't think this should be treated as – it's going to get a lot of Academy Award nominations, and I think some of that is because this is one of these big splashy – I don't want to say odes to Hollywood, but in some ways it is because it's, you know, based on source material from a 1937 movie with a couple of remakes along the way. So I think it's like one of those splashy movies that sort of Academy crowd all loves because it's like the magic of movie making and whatever. But – I don't know. Like, I just, as a movie and like as a 2-hour experience, it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I don't mean like the subjects covered were fun, but as a movie, it told a very self-contained story. And in today's environment of interconnectivity and connected universes and like fans talking and shipping characters online, it's just refreshing to get like a story that starts and ends here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if I'm explaining it correctly, but it was what it was.
No, you're explaining it pretty well. And let's we'll dip into spoilers, I guess. I'm not gonna throw the time code in here. I'll give you a pause, scroll down. We're doing an unedited episode here. Let's just spoil. If you don't want to spoil, just hang on a second. All right, Star Is Born. Audience gave it a 97, by the way. That's the highest rated movie from our audience of the year.
Damn.
Is that like highest rated of all time?
I need to do a check. I actually don't remember off the top of my head. I need to check. It might be though, but it was very consistently high. Very, obviously very, very high. I mean, obviously we'll get into the music in a second, the climactic part of the story and how everything kind of wraps up and it ties back to the addiction is that Jackson Maine, Bradley Cooper's character, does commit suicide, hangs himself because he can't take the burden of potentially derailing the career of Allie, Lady Gaga's character, who is his wife. It's pretty brutal. It's a brutal fucking story. And all of the A Star Is Born movies have a very similar storyline of how things work. There's a tragic ending. There's an award show disaster scene. Him pissing on the stage and at the Grammys is pretty tough.
Cringing out of your seat. That was wild.
That was the saddest part of the movie. You know, like,
oh, for sure.
Just kind of that. Yeah, that made me, I don't know if like cringe is the right word, but it made me feel bad, man.
There's a lot of foreshadowing. They drive by.
Oh, yeah.
Hollywood, and they drive by a billboard with a bunch of nooses on them.
I didn't even
first like
it didn't even click for me until you just said that.
First minute of the movie, maybe 2 minutes of the movie, but you get my point. It's in the first part of the movie. And so, I mean, there's foreshadowing. And the second he says, the second Allie's manager starts talking to him about like how he's going to ruin her life, that's when it kind of clicked in my head. I remembered that for some reason, like, oh, I know it's going to happen. Because I'd been waiting. Like, I know how these movies end. Like, I'd been waiting for the moment like that clued me into how this would end. And so that happened. But I think the big part of the movie where you're like, oh, man, like the emotional part is the second time he says, I just wanted to get another look at you or one last look at you. That was the part where you're like, oh, God damn it. Like, this is about to be very sad because, like, you know what he's saying. And to her, it's just him being funny and referencing the first time they met. So it's a heavy movie. It definitely has emotional times. And there's been people who I've seen said that they didn't feel any emotional connection to the movie. And I found that odd because I think, at least to me, I cared about them at that point. Like, you know, especially because of him, you're rooting for him because he has so many issues. And you're like, God, it's so tough. And it's a pretty gritty, and I'll let you extend that again, like a gritty, realistic look at, I feel like, substance abuse. Because I feel like a lot of times, they're not happy endings in movies, but you see, like, even though he went to rehab and fixed it, like, he still had demons and burdens that dragged him down. So it's a very tragic thing to see in a movie.
Yeah. So I talked about this a little bit in my review as well. And this is something that like affects obviously a ton of people in this country, unfortunately. And there's not really like a clear end in sight, if that makes sense. But like, I grew up with an alcoholic in the household, and it's not something that I think is ever portrayed correctly in a lot of movies, where they always end up demonizing the person. And like that portrayal in media, like in that archetype, it makes people feel more shitty about themselves. And it makes people who are addicts that get back into that cycle of like shame and regret. And then they feel like they're disappointing people, and it feeds into it. I mean, it just makes everything worse. And I think that Cooper's portrayal of addiction was way better than a lot than anything I've really seen, in that like he is at his heart like a good person that is fighting a disease and thinks he has to fight it himself. And like they're so ashamed of what they are that they think that asking, doing it with anybody, fixing it any other way than just fixing it themselves is wrong and like burdening people even more than they already are. And I think that showing that was really important. And I love the way they did that. And also for Lady Gaga on her side of it was totally, I think, perfect. Because when you love like someone who's an addict, you really are just afraid like every day of which person is coming home. If you're getting the sober person, which like you love, and that's the person like that you really, really care about, or if you're going to get the person who like you're going to have to like talk off the ledge every day, or they might not even be coming home at all. And that's the even scarier thing. And you could see her consistently being worried about that.
Yeah.
Like having people go to check up on him, having like calling him nonstop, trying to figure out where he is. And I thought that was one of the most stunningly accurate things, at least on a personal level for me, the way they portrayed addiction on both sides. Because sometimes it's either they're trying to make it look at this story of addiction from the person who loves them side, or look at it from the addict side, and there's no like balance. And I feel like their balance is perfect, and both portrayals on each side was just perfectly done. And I really appreciate that from Cooper on especially.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And I think it's like, it's one of those things where like your perspective is like invaluable, because I don't have the same perspective. And I didn't consider that, because in Hollywood, they do tend to, and not always, but historically, addiction and addicts are always or typically portrayed as irredeemable.
Yeah.
And it was, you don't often get a story where you have a character who is redeemable and the audience feels is worth redemption, but ultimately they don't get it in the movie. And that's something I just didn't think about until now. And it does make it a lot heavier, but yeah, anyway.
No, that's totally right. I think in that, I think that's just the bigger problem with the way they portray in a lot of movies and just media in general is just they feed into that shame cycle. And a lot of the time, they just people who are addicts, or they're just so ashamed of like their addiction that it feeds into that depression cycle, and it makes it 10 times worse. And I think that the way that they showed it here, where like he was so obviously like loved not just by like Lady Gaga, but loved by Sam Elliott, like his brother who came back to try and help him. Like he was very clearly loved and just like couldn't put that together, if that makes sense. And a lot of addicts out there face that same issue.
Well, there are even beyond addiction into just depression and suicide. There are a lot of famous people who commit suicide, and there are a lot the response to that is always like, how could they do that? Don't they know how many people love them? Mm-hmm. And the thing I don't think people understand is like when you're in that mindset, you don't think that way. You don't consider it that way. It's like people like you, in spite of like your flaws or whatever, you know, you think about yourself and your own self image, and the mindset's like, it kind of like Cooper's decision is everything would be better off without me, you know? So I don't know like how deep they went into that. And I don't know if any movie or ever or any media aside from somebody's own personal experiences and writing can ever properly touch or cover that. But I do think they covered those two subjects about as well as you could cover it in a Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga movie.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think if it's not that that was the intent of the movie, but I think if there is something that you should take away from this movie, if you're somebody that does struggle with substance abuse, is that number one, obviously you're loved. Like you're loved by somebody. It doesn't matter who it is. Like if you want to like try and act like you're shut off, if you want to act like you've disappointed people too many times, that's not the case. Like people love you. Like we love you. We're obviously a super pro mental health podcast. Like we love you guys a ton. And if you're someone who's going through it, gone through my whole life, like as far as like dealing with a loved one who's an addict, and like it's never easy, but like there's millions of people out there like you, especially in this country where that's just such like a back burner effort trying to help people who are going through substance abuse.
Yeah. And I think as like as movie talkers, I don't want to say podcasters, but the historical accuracy of substance abuse, like we were saying, and depression in movies has, I don't think it's helped anything, right? Like, and so it's nice to
probably not for the most part. No, yeah. Maybe more recently. Like I think Creed was a good example. Like social anxiety was tackled.
Yeah.
But no, I would say no. And I think this one ran the risk of, if not done properly, like beyond just like what the issues are for each of them, just like the whole thing could have been a big fucking cheese fest and just all like a corny movie about a star rising up. And I think he tackled it with, you know, some importance and like, I like using the word my word of the year is finesse, because I think they've finessed tough topics and certain things into movies this year, whether it be Sorry to Bother You or Eighth Grade or Black Klansman. I think he did a good job at that, Bradley Cooper and company, at making that happen. That's why I think it's so good, is that I don't think it is. And I think I think you said it off the top. I think people are boiling this movie down beyond what it really like. They're trying to overcomplicate something that was not a simple message. Like breaking it down is not simple, but like it was pretty clear what they were trying to tell you with this movie. And people are trying to be way too fucking internet woke about it and trying to like break it beyond what it really is.
Well, and it's like I said, like I wasn't emotionally destroyed by this movie, but I will not get it on any media platform and argue that someone watching this can't relate to it and be emotionally destroyed by it. And that's what makes me mad when people say like, oh, it was so contrived and cliche and all that stuff. It's like, there might be people watching it who can relate to it or appreciate, you know, Bradley Cooper's portrayal. There might be people who don't like it, but like, I don't want to be in a place where I'm saying like, no, you can't like find this completely emotionally destroyed, you know, just because I don't feel that way about it. And so I think it's one of those things where it's like, I just boil it down to like, if you don't like it because you think it's like unlikely, we'll blame it on the source material. But if you don't like it because you didn't like, you thought it was like hokey, well, I mean, that's on you, but that doesn't make it a bad movie. Like, and we're just in this age where we just overanalyze these things. And here we are, like, overanalyzing the overanalyzation. So
that's my apology.
Works. Yeah.
But for me, it's just one of those things. Just like, shut up and enjoy it. Like, it was a great film. It great music, great performances. And it was just very entertaining.
Yeah. We had somebody go after, well, he didn't go after us. Well, he did. He kind of criticized our rating system on Twitter. He's like, you guys give too many movies high grades. Like, but like, that's the thing. Like, a good movie is a good fucking movie. Like, well, I mean, that's just like bottom line. Like, I mean, a good movie is a good movie. I'm not going to lower a movie because, like, oh, I don't want to put it too high because, you know, good movies are so rare. Like, no, if someone makes a good fucking movie, this is a good movie, in my opinion.
And it's not like there's, like, a power ranking system or, like, a finite amount of, like, good movies that can be made. Like, there's, like, we can spread the wealth out. Like, there's, like, you don't have to bump movies down because there's other good movies being made.
And also, we do somewhat we select the movies we review, right? Like, we're not, like, actual movie reviewers where we have to go see every movie and rate them. Like, we typically have a schedule and pick like the most culturally resonant or like talked about hyped up movies, and a lot of times those are good movies. So like, we could go out there and review bad movies, but I think like it's just a selection bias in our point. So I mean, I get it. Like, you're free to come at like any criticism of like my ratings methodology, because I don't have the best or any one that is based in reality. But at the same time, I think that's what makes movies great, is that someone can think something's a pile of trash and someone can like it. But just because you didn't like it, that doesn't completely mean it's a bad movie, or that doesn't invalidate someone else's opinion about it.
This is what I'll say about that, is that if you're bitching that we don't give enough movies bad ratings, that just means you're outing yourself for not reading our blogs, because we blog about every movie, and we blog about a lot of shitty movies, a ton. We just don't review them on the podcast because it's not always good material for you guys to listen to.
Yeah, we give out – I actually looked it up because a guy said – and I hate referencing this because it doesn't bother me. I just kind of laughed. I was like, fuck, do I really give 85s or above to half my movies? Like, damn, like – I guess I'm an easy grader. I looked, and I really don't. I'm an asshole. It's like, there's like 2,250 out of like 2,500 movies I reviewed since 2006. I've given an 85 or above. Like, I'm pretty strict graders. But it just brings to the bigger point, because like, it's beyond the ratings. Like, if you don't like our ratings, it is what it is. But like, it's the idea that like, you can't call a movie like amazing or great because like, oh, well, it's not as good as The Godfather, right? Like, I mean, shut up. What are we fucking doing here? Like, if the movie's great, it's great. Like, bottom line, like, there's just no two ways about it. Like, I mean, that's what makes movies subjective. Like, we don't all have to agree. We, for the most part, typically do all agree to a certain extent. But like, you know, if it's great, it's great. Like, that's the thing. Again, it goes back to your original point, Drew. Like people are trying to – I think this movie's being very well received, but people are trying to be hot take artists with shit like this.
It's about clicks now, right?
That happens with anything good. Like, there has to be the contrarian looking for clicks.
Like, aside from like a few things that don't get any criticism ever, and I can't even think of any off the top of my head, but like, it's the economy of like the internet that we live in now, where a negative review is probably going to get 10 times more interaction than a positive review, right? And
I'm trying to think of like who gave this like a super negative review, like Neil deGrasse Tyson, like, sir, no stars were actually born during the course of the movie. 0 out of 0 stars. You're going to get to play the drums there.
Yeah, they're like all the way.
I like that was good.
2 feet away from me now. Anyway, that's been LC Plus therapy session. So this is a premium segment.
There was a review that I sent to our group recently that was so fucking bad.
Brody?
Oh, who did it?
Man, we should do that more often. We should do it like almost Chapo style, where we just read someone's like read someone's article or review of a movie and just roast them. I think we actually talked about doing that when we first made the pod.
We did. We did talk about roasting people who reviewed movies, but then it ended up being that we started reviewing them seriously, and then we figured we may end up getting roasted.
So I Googled it, and like, I don't going after people, so I'm not like going after anybody.
Send it to me, I'll do it.
No, I mean, I sent you guys the pictures. It was the capture, and you know, the headline is a star is born great American myth making or cliche trash? And it's like, how about like neither? Like, maybe it's just like a really good movie. Like, it doesn't have to that had to be anything bigger than that, right? And I feel like the internet kind of forces things to be a lot more culturally relevant for the sake of having something to talk about than it necessarily needs to be. It's like, this is a great movie, but I don't think this is like a Godfather type movie. I don't think this is something that's being on like AFI's list of like 100 films in 2039 or whatever. Anyway, whatever. I mean, but again, that's an opinion, and I'm not going to hate on anybody for their opinion. I just like a movie like this is something where it shifts the commentary into like, it's something a lot of people like, and then all of a sudden it becomes this thing where it's like, okay, well, if we don't like it, we can get some clicks. And I don't, you know, it's not fun.
Yeah. We know what we should talk about is Bradley Cooper's dog, Charlie, his in real life dog that played his dog in the movie. That was probably the cutest dog I've seen in my entire life.
How'd he get that part?
Yeah. Fucking nepotism at its finest. Bet no one else even tried out for that role.
So let's talk about the actual movie some more. I love the music.
So I mean, good. The
music's great. Music's incredible.
And I feel like an asshole because Shallow was actually my favorite song. I ran through the entire.
It's mine as well. Don't feel like an asshole.
Like, it wasn't because, mine. I like Alibi. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Maybe It's Time. That's good too.
And they all were good. A lot of care was made. You know, the songs felt real. Like I said earlier, it's hard. Sometimes you get these musical performances in these movies, and because the songs felt like they could be actual songs released by real artists, which I guess they kind of are, but for the sake of this argument, they're not. They felt great, but I felt bad because I'm like, Shallow is my favorite song, and that's the starred song on iTunes. Yeah, that's everybody's favorite song.
Did you guys like Bradley Cooper essentially doing like his Sam Elliott impression for his voice?
Yeah, that's basically what it was.
And then when they said that line, like, you stole my voice, I'm like, yeah, you kind of did. Like, you're just like, you're doing an impression of Sam Elliott. Like, that's your dialogue right now, which I kind of liked. I didn't hate it. The scene where Sam Elliott pulls out of the driveway after dropping off Bradley Cooper, and Bradley Cooper says, like, yeah, he's like, I did steal your voice, Chuck. I looked up to you, not our dad. And he has, like, tears in his eyes. I fucking lost it, dude. Lost it.
I thought that's where he was going to prompt. Like, I thought that's when the tragic thing was going to happen. It was almost like a fake out because then it happened a little later on. But that was a fucking awesome moment. That'll be the moment that you see when Sam Elliott or Bradley Cooper is nominated. That's going to be the little like stinger moment to show in the montage.
The moment that got the biggest laugh in the theater for me was when they went back to his hotel room and he obviously was
passed out,
blackout drunk, but Lady Gaga went into the bathroom to wash herself off and she went below the belt, which I thought was probably incredibly realistic. I thought that was good, and the audience did too. Got a good laugh.
There was actually like a lot of moments with like pretty heavy laughter throughout the movie. I think they had some pretty good delivery lines, especially fucking Andrew Dice Clay out of nowhere, who I did not recognize at all until
the day after.
I was waiting for his appearance the entire movie. I was like, did he have like a bit role or something? I thought he was going to have speaking lines. Because he had no hair. That's what didn't get. I couldn't get it.
He was good.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle, I thought was good in his small role. He had a pretty nice little monologue there to Bradley Cooper about life and getting to where you need to get in life. Maybe you don't resonate with the message. Maybe you don't resonate with the emotion. That's fine. I mean, that's movies. But I thought what was done here was great. And I think people are trying to it's the same thing with me with La La Land last year. It's like people are trying to make something more complex than it really is into this like big over, like just look at the movie for what it is. Like, I mean, it was well done, well made, well written, good music. The story was relatable, humanizing for it being about two stars. I don't know. You know, if you don't like it, you don't like it. That's fine. But I just, again, it goes back to the first thing we said in this whole review, as I've said 100 times now, is that like, Troll mentioned, like, people are trying to over assess this movie when like it's all pretty cut and dry right there in your face. This isn't like fucking Prometheus or anything. Like, it's telling you what it is, you know. So
Prometheus, that's a great example.
Fucking love Prometheus. Talk about how the aliens are God. So that's A Star Is Born. I gave it a 96. Audience gave it a 97. Ken Jack gave it a 92. Troll gave it a 90 after giving it a 95 initially. Something tells me this might get bumped up by the end of the year by Trill Bollins on the old regrades.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the I kind of felt like the movie could have been a little longer. I normally never say that. Interesting.
I said the pacing was, I thought it sped up a little bit too much in the middle. I thought like it jumped really quick to her being like from starting her career going to being on SNL.
Eddie, we want to be good now.
Yeah.
Not as bad. The opposite of that. Well, and I guess like as a score, I mean, it's a good problem to have because I'm usually never really like a movie should be longer. I usually appreciate a smaller movie, but I wanted to see more and I wanted the pacing to be stretched out a little bit. But again, the source material itself is like, you call this movie cliche or unrealistic. It's like, yeah, it's a movie and it's a movie based off of like a really unrealistic premise. But that's what they had to work with, and they did it really well. Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world?
I liked when Andrew Dice Clay essentially shat all over her in like that intro scene. Oh.
Like, yeah, you know, some people are the born to be stars, and some people just look like trash bags. That's my daughter here, right here. Look at her. She looks like shit.
Yeah. I and that's something I can see, like, that's one of the heavy-handed moments of the movie, but it's a very heavy-handed movie. I think there's some parts where that's what I thought Lady Gaga did, like, very well, is she really straddled that fine line between being, like, very on tone with the movie and being kind of, I don't know the right word for it, but it could have easily been cheesy. I think Jeff mentioned that earlier, but she played it very well.
That's the one thing I'll say about her performance is like I still think she struggled a bit in the emotionally heavy parts, but she excelled so well at just like normal conversation. And that is something that like sounds like it should be so easy, but it's so incredibly hard. And you see it in a lot of actors that they have issues with it. But I thought she was perfect at it. And that helped the chemistry with her and Cooper immensely. And it made their dialogue just feel so natural and smooth. So huge props to that.
And just in like Lady Gaga terms, I'm loving like the second act of her career. I think I think that, you know, it kind of started when she went with like Tony Bennett and they recorded that album and toured together. She almost was like, I'm tired of doing what I've done. I'm going to do something different. Like I admire her for doing different things. And I thought this was like a really good, I don't know. Like, I don't even think it's a train. I think she could do anything she wants. So like, there's like really no transition phase, but I went down a rabbit hole where I was watching old Lady Gaga videos. And it's like just amazing that she went from like being known for wearing the meat dress to being like people actually recognizing her for her talent. Cause she is supremely talented.
Insanely. Her voice, when she first gets to like on stage and does Shallow, fucking chills every time. Every time she hits a note, literally send chills down my spine. It's crazy.
The meat dress. What a change from the meat dress. I loved it. Like I said, I thought the Shallow scene, one of the bigger goosebump scenes I've seen in a movie in a very long time. That was
when the first lighting was changing. Like, it was on her. Like, it was just like the camera was on her and she didn't even have to do anything, but like, just like her expression and I mean, maybe she did do something, but like, it wasn't played overboard. It was like a regular person with a decision to like thrust themselves into this very intimidating situation, which I think a lot of people can relate with, but also just from a production of the movie standpoint, like the lighting kind of flipping between white and blue and whatever. It was just a really well done scene.
Yeah. Fucking great. Fantastic movie. We all liked it. Highly suggest you go and see it. Star is Born. All right. We're going to be doing top five tearjerker movie scenes. But first, this episode for the third time is brought to you in part by a sponsor. Do you know what today is? What's today? You know what today is?
Today is Sunday.
Correct. Do you have the Sunday scaries right now?
You know I do, my friend.
Well, I would suggest that you reach over and grab yourself a couple Sunday scary gummies.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were saying reach over and grab my child drums.
No, yes. Reach a little further beyond that and get the Sunday scary gummies. CBD. Boy, is it hot right now. There it is.
March should have beat up your own drummer with CBD gummies.
you're like gummies, and these are very obviously like solid ibuprofen. Ooh, that's a word I don't pronounce right. Right there,
pills.
Or no, I just said ibuprofen. That's how I say it. Ibuprofen,
ID? Like ID.
Ibuprofen. It's ibuprofen, right?
Women, ibuprofen.
Ibuprofen. Anyway, continue.
CBD pretty hot right now, derived from hemp and delivers many of the benefits you get from THC. These are convenient and delicious ways to get your daily dose of CBD and help calm that anxiety of having scary Sundays. All natural way to help you deal with the feelings and stress of anxiety and heading back to work, you know, doing your spreadsheets and your sum ifs, something that Ken, Jack, and I do every day at work.
Yep.
Always hammering out those formulas. Unlike any other CBD products, this one's sourced directly from farms right here in the United States of America, the good old US of A. Great way to deal with those nasty hangovers after a long night of raging too. So we are told. I don't rage though. So I just take them to help with my stress and anxiety. A lot of people who listen to this podcast, they've been buying these. We've been getting some screenshots. We love our Sunday Scaries and you should try them right now. Get 10% off your entire order using promo code LIGHTS, LIGHST, LIGHTS at checkout, SundayScaries.com, and enter promo code LIGHTS to get a discount. Get ready, get set, relax. All right.
I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
I never use some if. I always use some ifs only if I'm looking for one criteria in the range, just because I want that flexibility to go back and add another criteria if I ever need to.
So, wow.
It feels good getting this off my chest.
Damn, dude. That's heavy.
I can tell you're happier. Somebody tweeted us mid-podcast, by the way, about you.
What'd they say?
Are you folks currently recording? We are. If so, please ask Trophy plans on doing the tweet again sometime before 2019.
Yeah, ooh. I do.
A countdown before the year ends? No way.
What a breaking news. We know if somebody calls you out, they didn't listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
You know what? You're the man.
top five tearjerker movie scenes. 5 through 1, so there's no 10 through 6. You have to rush through just 5 through 1. Ken, Jack, I'll let you start it out.
Okay, so we're just going to do straight 5 through 1, not 1 by 1?
Oh, no, 1 by 1. Number 5.
Oh, okay. So my number 5 is Life and Beautiful When the Dad Dies. That part gets me every time. And I've seen that movie like 1,000 fucking times because they used to make us watch it. And then I took Italian. They used to make us watch it there. And they used to make us watch it in like history class for some reason. And so I've seen a lot. Every single time the dad like walks away with the Nazi, like dancing and shit, like trying to make the kid feel at ease, and then the kid comes out and everyone's just gone. Oh, hits me.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. That's pretty tough. And here's my number 5 from Rugrats in Paris.
No, wow. From Holocaust to Rugrats in Paris.
There's a scene where Chucky like just wants a mom that'll stay, I think is what it is. And you see his mom in the clouds. It's so sad. Yeah,
Chucky Finster's dad is a hit it and quit it bitch. Like he just
no. No.
Chucky, you gotta understand. I can't get tied down.
Oh no. The Chucky scene in Rugrats, all jokes aside, is incredibly emotional where he talks about his mom. It's like really fucking sad. But the one in the movie it's a tearjerker. I remember getting sad when I saw it as a kid.
Chucky, why do you remember your dad? My dad was still beat.
Do you remember the song they played like over that scene?
No. Oh god.
They used the actual theme song. It didn't really fit in all that well.
You ever hear the remix of the Rugrats theme? It's actually pretty good.
Oh, from with Maya from the soundtrack to the Rugrats movie?
No, it's like a rap remix of it from like a couple years ago. It's pretty good.
There's
my number 5.
You see his mom in the clouds. It's like, that's a nice scene. All right, Trillbones.
Oh, she died? I thought she just left.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's why we were laughing at your joke.
Oh, wow. I was like, damn. I was like, what? You're getting really dark, but like.
I thought she left and then Chucky Finster's dad. What's his name? Something Finster, Stu? Obviously.
No,
Charles Finster.
She dies when he's a young kid. There's like a really emotional scene about how she's always with him in like the TV show. It's like
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Wow. But you feel like, wow, boy, do you feel like an asshole about those cartoons now? I bet.
Yeah, I fucked that one up, but I still think Charles Finster is out there on Tinder somewhere. Dishing out back shots. All right, Joe, you're up.
Ah, he gets a wife. He gets a wife in Rugrats and Parents. All right, continue.
Good for him, man. Number 5, The Green Mile when John Coffey is executed.
Yeah.
Oh.
That hurts, man. Oh, man. Fuck and Percy. Also, the guy who played Percy is also like a dick in real life, too, right?
I don't know. But I do know that going back and watching that, especially after Michael Clark Duncan's passing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just like, peace. Yeah. Oof, that was brutal.
He would have been like, that was another piece of news I think we talked about last week, the John Henry series that's coming to Netflix. He would have been a perfect John Henry. He was just like the most brolic guy I think I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, dude, he was just great in everything he was in, like comedy, yeah. Drama, even maybe not Daredevil, but he was the kingpin. He was the kingpin.
I thought he was a good kingpin. Who do you think is better, him or Vincent D'Onofrio, right? He plays kingpin.
I don't. You know my answer.
All right, I'm just saying. I wanted you to say it. That's all.
Michael Clark Duncan's pretty great. He was also in the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
By the way, it's Chaz Finster.
Oh. Chaz.
His name is Charles, but they call him Chaz.
You know he was elite rope.
Oh god. He's got that mustache.
He does. The mustache, it's like the opposite of the Hitler stash. The middle's gone. Everything else is there.
It's the John Waters pencil stash.
Gone. Yeah. A little thicker. Their audience list is actually very good. Let me just say that. Number five, though, of the death of all the Avengers in Infinity War.
I didn't like cry at that. I was just shocked.
Yeah, it's shocking. Not tear-jerking.
Just because you know they're all going to live.
Weird. Strange pick. The rest of the list pretty good though. Ken Jack number four.
My number four is, and I've only seen this scene twice, so maybe it's recency bias. Mama Coco, when she remembers the song.
Remember me?
Yeah. She remembers the song and starts like, what's his name? Gets saved. What was his name? Hector? Hector gets like saved. That's a great scene. I love you, Mama Coco, wherever you are.
Shout out, Mama Coco. My number four, excuse me, is I'll Be Right Here. E.T. when E.T. leaves and goes back up on his ship. It's a very nice, touching moment. Big time nostalgic tearjerker for me. Nostalgia plays a bit of a big part here. Like Rugrats in Paris as a kid. E.T. and Elliot at the end of E.T. is always gets me. Mine are mostly happy tear-jerking scene. Actually, they all are, with the exception of Rugrats in Paris.
I heard that too, Trill.
Yeah. This is a tough list to make on our because I figured there would be some sort of jerking jokes in here somewhere.
Tear joking.
That was my first pick, was just like a fucking Ocean Crush or whatever that movie was.
Trill, number four.
Oh, end of Watch. The entire end of that movie. Wow. Zavala's death.
Great pick.
Oh. Brutal. And I mean, even more brutal just because Pena and Gyllenhaal just murder the end of that movie.
That was a brutal.
I love End of Watch. I feel End of Watch is underrated.
I agree with that completely. This is a very underrated movie.
It doesn't get talked about enough. When did it come out? 2013?
Like, yeah, probably 2013, 2012 or something like that. I think just especially among Jake Gyllenhaal's performances, that's got to be among the best, I would say.
Yeah, End of Watch is fucking awesome.
That was a brutal ending. Damn. Now I'm sad. Fuck you, man.
I know, man. I mean, that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah, we get asked a lot, like, suggestions for what to watch. If you've never seen End of Watch, go rent that one at your local Redbox. It's definitely worth a watch. All right, audience number four, the hospital room scene from Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
There you go.
In the hospital bed. Yeah, that was very emotional. Yeah, it's a very good pick.
I got to let me add real quick. Remember Tag? That movie was really good.
Oh, and the ending hospital scene?
That ending was so like shocking in how like serious shit got all of a sudden. Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't about jerking and there's a real offbeat ending. Oh.
It's not bad. It doesn't make the movie bad, but it just I remember Ken Jack and I had that criticism. They're like, it got a little too deep there for like what like it was. It almost felt like you got toyed with as an audience. Like, you're like, huh? Like, oh, man, that got really depressing. And that didn't happen in real life. Like, that's not
thing, yeah.
That's not what happened with the people it was based off of.
I would almost if that had been fake, like he had been doing that to get the tag or whatever, then the whole movie would have been totally different. Like, maybe 5 points higher on the scale. It's a wild move.
Oh, that was rough, man. I kept waiting for them to, like, reverse that. And say psych, and then the movie ended. I'm like, oh, God. Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Good point. Good point. Ken Jack, number three.
My number three is the Wilson scene from Castaway. Screaming Wilson as it floats away. That's one of those movies I saw super young, and I was really broken up by that. And still, like, it gives you like those like retrograde tears every time I see that scene. I mean, I feel like I haven't seen Castaway in like a solid year or something. But it came on Netflix, and I saw it. And I'm just I'm queuing it up. I'm just waiting to see Tubby Tom Hanks.
I probably haven't watched Castaway since like high school.
It's so good, dude. I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but it's so good. I love that movie, man.
Number three, let's get the nostalgia back out for me. The end of Toy Story, when Andy drives away and the toys are there. I mean, that for me, I mean, I grew up with Toy Story. So that was just like, that's a big nostalgia trip. Cause that's just like basically the movie saying, all right, fucking move on already. Like it's like, it was right after I graduated high school too. So it was like right around the same age. Always quite the tearjerker. That was actually number six on the audience list. Just happy tears. But you're like, oh man, later Buzz, later Woody, time to fucking grow up, I guess, and pay bills. Get student loans. So yeah, Toy Story 3, love that. Some people actually number eight on the audience list is when they almost died in the trash.
Toy Story 3, yeah.
Yeah, but I like, I mean, the end, the other part of the end, I like even better when he goes off to college. All right, Trill, number three.
I Am Legend, when his dog died.
Oh, great pick.
Like,
damn it.
Maybe these movies that you guys are mentioning are a lot better than I Am Legend, but that dog dying in I Am Legend made me so sad, dude.
Yeah, I know, dude. Oh my God. Damn it. Now I'm just thinking about it getting sad. That's I think probably such an easy way. Cause like, I'm sure Marley and me is either on the audience list or one of your guys, but like dog dying is an immediate like cry.
His child hands him the puppy dog from like the helicopter or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's how he got the damn dog. And then the dog goes and dies the way it dies. Fuck that, dude.
I mean, it worked.
Yeah, it did. It just made me feel bad. I don't watch movies to feel bad.
I think Will Smith had that stretch where he did like that, Pursuit of Happiness, and like 7 Pounds or whatever that is. It 7 Pounds, right? I think.
Yeah.
He did like that stretch of movies in the course of like 4 years, and they all had like tear jerking scenes like that.
Not to shit on Will Smith, what was that trash ass movie he made like two years ago?
The Con Man one.
No.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
No, fuck. What was it? Hang on.
Oh, the one with his son? After Collateral or something?
Collateral Beauty.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Oh,
shit. Yeah, yep, yep.
With Edward Norton, Kate Winslet, yeah, Naomi Harris, Helen Mirren was deaf. Yeah, it was like.
I mean, After Earth sucked too. And sort of the Con Man movie.
After Earth was a con as well, though.
Yeah, like, that was his fault.
Watching After Earth because he dies right away. You're like, what the fuck? What am I watching? I'm watching a Jaden Smith movie now. Audience number three, Marley and Me, dog dying. They're on the same wavelength as Trill. Dog dying in Marley and Me. Ken Jack, number two.
My number two, I'm going to just watch Pat Mahomes score a touchdown in the comeback bid. My number two is the not yet scene in Gladiator when his like friend like buries his like toy doll thing of his family and just says like, I will join you soon, but not yet my friend, and like that Enya song starts playing. Oh, that gets me my fucking feelings, dude. And I just want to clarify, all of these scenes in this movie that I've mentioned, I have physically cried at. So if you guys are posing right now, I don't respect you.
I'm not posing.
If you did not cry at any of these songs,
also tearjerker doesn't totally mean you completely cried, right?
I'm just saying I went full authentic and I cried at all of these scenes.
And Alexa, play Enya. What's that one popular Enya song?
Who will say where the time goes? Where the time knows? Only time.
What's the actual song from Gladiator? Hey, Google.
Oh, just look at that. It just played on cue.
Play Gladiator Enya song. No, right.
Alexa, stop. Thanks.
I listen to that music when I beat it down. Who's next?
mine is next. Grandma Coco. You took my thunder earlier. Mm. That scene puts the up scene to shame. Because also it's like happy tears too. You're like, oh my God. Right when she starts singing.
Yep.
And then like right after you see her in like the land of the dead too, like she, because you figure out that she died. Oh my God. Brutal. Man.
Got a lot of animated movies on your list, man.
You're right. Three out of five.
I got one.
It's an emotional scene.
I'm a big boy. I don't have a single one.
What's your number two?
But when the dog died and I Am Legend.
You're so cool, dude. God damn, bro.
You want to know my number two?
Yeah.
Yes.
The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. The end of that movie.
I didn't like that movie very much.
I like that movie, man. That ending was sad. And his parents, like, wailing and stuff.
Who's the main Nazi? Was it David Thewlis?
I don't remember.
Hold on, I'm looking it up because they make more Big Mouth references.
I just remember Asa Butterfield is in that movie because that name rules.
Asa Butterfield.
Yeah, he was Ender in Ender's Game, which was a stinker.
Stop. Oh, yeah. Real stinker. All right. Audience number two, animated movie. Can you guess what it is?
Toy Story 3, the trash compactor scene.
It was David Thewlis.
Land Before Time.
Nope.
Oh, Land Before Time when his mom dies. Oh, my God. That's a brutal part.
Small soldiers when the toys float away from the little boat. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I'm kidding. It's Lion King. It's Mufasa.
Yeah, I
don't think we built up enough rapport with Mufasa for it to be that sad.
Yeah, I don't. Me neither.
I never, because Mufasa never actually like died. He still like talks to his son in the clouds. It never like he didn't really like die. Kind of did. But, you know, it didn't make me all that sad.
Little Mufasa story time. There was a time when I was at GMA where I moved over to afternoons and evenings. I had to help out with the ABC accounts. It was like 4 months. And I was not sending tweets on GMA for the first time in a while. And I had like a method to my madness. And the person that filled in for me tweeted on a Monday morning, RT, if this was you this morning, .. #Mondays, and it's a gif of Simba with dead Mufasa. And keep in mind, that's on a Disney branded social account.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. And the headline in Cosmopolitan says, "Good morning, America. Ruins mornings everywhere with dead Mufasa tweet." Jimmy Kimmel said it. Jimmy Kimmel's like, ensured a bad morning, America. And we didn't post Disney gifts for a while. And I was immediately put back on the mornings after that.
Your exit interview, it's like, well, the worst thing I did was T-Lizard, so
yeah,
I'd say like everything went pretty well here.
Oh boy. Okay. Ken Jack, I'm gonna call you Trill Jack.
I kind of like that.
Oh, you got a joke for that one, Ken Jack? Oh, he froze.
Joke was so obvious he froze
in like he froze in a very Elon Musk pose too.
He's back.
I'm back. Okay. The number one scene for me is in Children of Men, the scene where the baby starts crying and everyone stops fighting. Like, I've seen that scene like 1,000 times. I actually like legitimately have probably watched the movie 15 times and have cried at that scene every single time. It fucking kills me. I don't remember who did the soundtrack. I think it might have been Giacchino or something. But God damn, it was so good. So good. I will forever be indebted to Clive Owen for making that movie so fucking fantastic. I loved it.
I had a friend who thought that the lead in that movie was John Krasinski.
Just beyond untrue. So 2008, the guy was like 25.
Well, I got to admit, I mix up Clive Owen and Gerard Butler all the time.
That's more fair. At least they somewhat look similar. That's okay.
John Krasinski was like 19 when that movie came out.
Yeah.
My number one tearjerker movie scene, when the crew is in front of the Bellagio fountain at Ocean's 11 after they pulled off the heist.
You cried at that? Shut the fuck up.
It's emotional. It's an emotional scene for me.
I just have never seen a heist that good, Paul.
It's my number one. Goosebumps every time. I well up. It's a beautiful movie. Great fountains. Troll Ballin's number one.
All right, number one. Who framed Roger Rabbit when Roger Rabbit was framed? No, I'm just kidding.
Damn.
My number one movie, folks. My number one was About Time, when the main character tells his father he can't go back in time and see him anymore because it would undo the birth of his child. And that's the last time he sees his dad. And he loves his dad, and his dad gave him this like genetically inherited gift of time travel. And it just was like, oh, it just crushed me, dude.
I thought it was pretty good. Amanda Seyfried, Justin Timberlake. I liked it.
Okay.
I kind of like that movie.
I will stand for, was it On Time?
In or Time.
Out of, in Time.
In Time. So you teased it earlier in the group, right? Say it? Because I actually, when I read it, I thought you meant In Time.
Me too.
Like 5 minutes, I'm like, what is he talking about?
when he was running towards his mom, played by Olivia Wilde, and her clock was running out of time, and he was about to transfer more time to her, and his time transfer wrist, and then she collapsed with 1 second left or whatever. Oh, man.
It's a good scene.
That movie could have been very well done. It wasn't a great movie, but the concept. I just like the funniest part of the movie was Vincent Kartheiser as Amanda Seyfried's father.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I wonder what he's up to. He's got a great bad guy look.
He does. I feel like I haven't seen him in a movie in a pretty long time. Actually,
you're right. You haven't, because I'm looking at the list and I don't.
It took that Mad Men money and just left the game. Got that Pete money. He had to shave his hair back like a quarter of a centimeter every episode to like be more bald. Anyway, About Time, folks. No, not In Time. About Time it's a pretty good movie, but it's like we talked about earlier, people argue that movies were like cliche and like overwrought. Like it definitely was that, but it did it for me. So
appreciate that.
All right.
Oh, God. Johnny Galecki was In Time? I didn't even know that.
Number one for the audience, the beginning of Up.
Oh, boo. Boo. You don't even know they're a poor. They could have been in a terrible marriage. You just saw the highlight reel. You saw the fucking Instagram page of like a couple's relationship. You didn't even see the bad parts. Fuck you guys.
That dude's jaw was square as hell.
He did. He didn't have a chiseled fucking jaw.
Well, I mean, square could be chiseled, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, I think like anything that's not like a round face like mine is pretty chiseled.
You have a fucking round face. You're like the ultimate self-deprecator.
I do. I have very low self-esteem. That's why it's funny.
Oh, man. All right. So that's our episode. I don't know how we're going to do reviews this week. I don't know if we're going to. I think we'll probably review both on Thursday. We're all able to see the movies. We'll be reviewing First Man and Bad Times at, I almost said Ridgemont, Bad Times at the El Royale. You're reviewing those this Thursday. Let me do the quick runoff of movies we got coming up. I like doing that. Just a quick reminder before we wrap this up. So we have those this week. First Man and Bad Times at the El Royale. Which should be both pretty fun to talk about. The week after that, we have Halloween. Halloween comes out this week?
Sure. You're asking the wrong guy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like the 18th, right?
Yeah, so yeah, we're reviewing Halloween next week with Jared. We're also going to have a movie commentary release this week. Myself, Ken Jack, Tyler Coley, and Jared are all going to watch the Busta Rhymes Halloween movie, Halloween Resurrection.
Tro's favorite.
Yeah.
Woo-ha.
And then I think we're probably going to watch the second episode of The Slap with PFT this week as well. So get ready for that.
Hell yeah.
I'm very excited for that. So Halloween next week.
Can I tease the First Man review?
Sure.
Shoot.
I think you guys are kind of disappointed. I haven't seen it yet, but I think you guys.
Well, we'll save. Our review will be online tomorrow on Monday.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tease it. I think there was some disappointment there. I don't think you guys disliked it, but I think there was some disappointment.
You're not wrong.
Tease is a tease. After that, Can You Ever Forgive Me and Beautiful Boy. We'll be reviewing those two, followed by Bohemian Rhapsody. I think PFT is going to come on for that one. After that, we're going to have The Grinch. Coley will be on for that one. I don't know what we're going to review. We're going to rank then. And then we'll have James Mr. Sunday Movies back on for Fantastic Beasts 2. The Crimes of Grindelwald. And we'll be ranking the Harry Potter. The Harry Potter rankings are going to be a very important moment in this podcast's history because people might be very mad at us.
So I don't think I think the official review embargo for Bohemian Rhapsody is still on, but people who saw the movie were able to give their first impressions.
Oh, they were.
Yeah. And it seemed like universally it was like Rami Malek's really good in this movie. And then they had nothing else to say.
No, there was a good one that said it says. Let me try to think what it said. Oh, it was like Rami Malek does a very good imitation of Freddie Mercury, which is like, that's not what you really want to hear.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to hear you did a good imitation of him. You want to, like,
it's not like a fucking Times Square Michael Jackson impersonator. He's like a professional actor doing a performance.
There is a critic who is a very nice guy. I'm not a fan of his reviews. Let me say that. So he thinks Rogue One's the best Star Wars movie ever made, better than Empire.
Yeah. Oh, so I immediately just don't respect this guy a little bit.
He's out there. And I agree with him on some things, like he loves La La Land, but he said, holy hell. What? What happened?
I just like loving La La Land is a fringe opinion in 2018.
No, like I don't disagree on everything he says, but he said in his tweet, holy hell. Bohemian Rhapsody is absolutely fantastic, a rousing, emotional, cinematic champion that will rock you. Rami Malek is
rousing.
Wait, I'm not done. Rami Malek is magnificent. It's great fun, and it will rock you. A star is born. You've been served. Hashtag Queen. Hashtag Freddie Mercury. First of all,
wow! Bohemian Rhapsody is a day at the races. Boom. Folks,
two, he dropped.
You're
two.
My best friend.
Our good friend Pete Blackburn, he made fun of this guy on Twitter because he's like, you worked in two We Will Rock You references in two sentences in one tweet. Like,
nailed it.
But like, see, that's the other thing. Like, this goes back to us talking about reviewing movies. Like, he compared it to A Star Is Born. Like, how are those movies at all comparable? Like, one is a musical biopic. The other is not. Like, he's just like,
anything's comparable if you have a very small brain that doesn't work.
Bohemian Rhapsody is a real Bohemian Rhapsody of a movie.
Oh, hashtag Galileo, too.
Oh, God. Oh, dude. Whatever, man. I think I'm going to mildly enjoy Bohemian Rhapsody, but nobody's coming away saying, well, except for him, saying it's great, right?
I still like how you were the first person, I think, in all of the internet to point out that they made the very express point to show you that the other guy made We Will Rock You, like the stomp clap shit.
Yeah, because the whole thing is essentially written by the surviving members of Queen, which, like, Brian May is great, but I don't know the other two guys. Pete something?
The guy that yells about Galileo in the trailer. How many Galileos do you want? Like, oh, they did the thing from the song. Like, holy shit.
He just has them writing in parts where before they go on stage, Freddie Mercury just compliments them individually one by one. Like, no, he did that.
Yes,
he said that every time.
There's a scene where Freddie Mercury is like, let's see, a second one is killed off. And then the other one's like, how about another one bites the dust?
Hello, Freddie Mercury. Oh. We're the Beatles.
Hello. I'm John Lennon from the Beatles, Freddie Mercury. I got a good idea for a song. Beatles. I truly feel like you are the champions.
Oh, God damn it.
All righty. That is it. Anything else?
We should like pick a somebody that we would want a musical biopic like the Queen one for. Like somebody current that's not dead or like they're faded out of.
I think we've done this in an audience question.
Did we really like pick like an audience like an artist we would want now to have a biopic for? Or?
We can do it again at some point. That could be fun with PF. We can make some music too.
Oh God, I'm so tired.
Takashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah, the Takashi 6ix9ine into the Spider-Verse. It actually just becomes a real musical, like, ensemble cast movie.
I'm the Nick Cage
Tekashi 69. Here's
it's like Lil Pump gets his own biopic. He's like 24 years old.
That's it for Ken Jack and Troll Ballins. I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Thursday.
And have a good week at the box office, folks. Folks.
Like a rocket man, yeah, like a rocket man, yeah. I'm a rocket man, Spider-Man on a Saturday, damn. On a private hunter, I'm a rocket launcher, it gotta be the pride of something. Hop up that man is stumbling. I stumble up on a mill. I stumble up on a million five. I spent a fortune on Dover seals. If I tell you the numbers, you probably cry. If I tell you you're faking, you probably die. These days, if he say that he hit, then he probably lied. If you say you got wings and some fish, then you probably fried. Got my carrots out of Bunny Clyde. She let me back in like she never cried. She let me back in like I never lied. I look like a cat with 11 lives. I really kiss shit, you can ask a fly. I'm steady chasing like I'm never tired. I'm living scary like 100 highs. La mama says I can put a fly.